Hello and welcome to another edition of the Cinema Clash. I am Charlie Jewell of charliejewell.com, and with me is my co-host, Hannah Bookdahl of chickflix.net. Hello, Hannah.
Hello, Charlie.
We didn't bet last week, so I went ahead and bought the bottle of wine myself. We're enjoying a nice Malbec tonight.
I appreciate that. It's a lovely choice.
Oh, thank you very much. And so tonight we're going to cover Egyptian god infighting in Gods of Egypt, an Olympic underdog in Eddie the Eagle, and the second half of Oscars if we pick the winner, because most importantly, the Oscars are next Sunday, this Sunday, February 28th, 8 o'clock Eastern. You ready for the Oscars?
I am so ready. I think it'll be an interesting watch, and I'm looking forward to seeing what Chris Rock does with it.
He's going to have some fun. But first, I want to start you off with a little question.
Shoot.
Imagine it's a lazy Sunday afternoon. You're on the couch. Nothing's going on.
I mean, a typical Sunday afternoon.
And you're flipping channels. Mm-hmm. And you're passing all these movies. What are the one or two, some movies that if you happen to stumble across it, you have no choice. You're in it for the long haul. You're going to watch this movie.
Well, I don't have any of the premium channels, so for me, it's always going to be those marathons that's on TNT or something like that, which are usually romantic dramas, romantic comedies. But I would say the must-stop ones are Top Gun for the 2 millionth time. Karate Kid always seems to get me. Kate and Leopold is one that always gets me.
You gotta be kidding.
No, it's a great one. And any musical movie. So Sound of Music, Grease, West Side Story.
What about Grease 2?
Grease 2, maybe not so much, but I might stop briefly. And then, of course, there's the old classics like An Affair to Remember.
Oh, good
I'll
Lord.
Stop on that one. And It's a Wonderful Life. During the holiday season, I'll stop on that one.
Well, I agree with you on Top Gun. If Top Gun's on, I'm in it. I don't care if it's in the beginning with Cougar or if it's all the way at the end when he's blowing MiG-28s out of the sky. But some of mine are Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
That's a good one.
Clerks. Animal House. It's still funny.
That was my first R-rated movie.
But another one is, it's a sci-fi film, and it's not on all the time, but if I do happen to see it, I don't know if you remember, it's from 1998, Dark City.
Nope.
Dark City just came out of nowhere in 98, and it's become, I think, a semi-cult classic. People really still talk about this movie, and I bring it up because it was directed by a man named Alex Proyas. He did Dark City, 2004's iRobot.
Okay.
2009's Knowing with Nicolas Cage. I don't know if you saw that. He also did 2016's Gods of Egypt. Gods of Egypt. I don't even know where to begin with this. It's 99% CGI. I think even some of the actors are CGI, even though they're all human.
Come on.
And it takes place, I guess, really before history, before the Greek mythology, before Roman mythology. We're talking Egyptian mythology. And it takes place in a sort of Garden of Eden, Cairo. Gods and humans are living together, Hannah. They're living together. Humans, they're like us. They're our size. But the gods are like 8 to 10 feet tall. And whenever they choose to, they can morph into uber gods like falcons and flying eagles and stuff. And this movie, I'm going to get into just how ridiculous and stupid Gods of Egypt is. But I want to get your initial impression.
I think I liked it more than you did. I did not like it all that much. To me, it was sort of an Aladdin meets Exodus, Gods and Kings, that other movie that nobody saw about a year ago. And I thought the acting was actually fine. I just thought the movie was sort of this epically boring kind of story. And it went on way too long. I would have cut it down by at least a half hour. But I definitely did not hate it the way you seem to.
It should have been one of those 90-minute things, but it's over 2 hours. You brought up the acting. This silly acting, and out of anyone, a lot of people who could have been worst actor, this one's easy. Chadwick Boseman as the god of wisdom, Thoth. Chadwick Boseman was fine as Jackie Robinson in 42, and he delivered a virtuoso performance as James Brown in Get On Up. But he better hope people forget about this movie real quick, which I think they will. People are going to forget about this movie. He is, I don't know what he's doing. It's on par with Eddie Redmayne in Jupiter Ascending, is how bad Chadwick Boseman is.
Oh, I didn't think it was that bad. I don't think his role will actually stand out all that much, because I think the movie as a whole will be considered rather forgettable. But it's fine. I think it's really only for maybe the young adult crowd, if they like a sci-fi fantasy movie, if anyone actually has any knowledge of Egyptian mythology, which I did not, they might get more out of this movie. But I wouldn't overly recommend it to anyone, but there might be a few people out there that would enjoy it. And I like watching Gerard Butler.
Gerard Butler is going to have a busy 2 weeks. We're going to talk about him next week, too, in London Has Fallen. So Gerard Butler, he's a Scotsman. And in this movie also are two Aussies, a Dane,
a Brit.
A French woman. No, actually, I didn't.
No Brits?
There are no Brits. And it's funny, you think there would be, because they're all talking in fake, overtly fake British accent. And I've seen this as a trend. We've seen the Clash of the Titans remakes lately, Immortals, and the god-awful The Legend of Hercules. And they're all talking in this really high, soft vowel tone, fake British accent. Nobody is British, and these accents are ridiculous.
Nobody seemed particularly Egyptian to me, that's for sure.
There's a big scandal about, they call it whitewashing.
Yes, it is very odd that you have these Aussies and Dutch and French folks playing Egyptians, and it is a very white cast. But again, it is what it is. I don't think it was a terrible movie. I just think it's not a very good movie. And it was ultimately just boring. It was just flat, and I was ready for it to end.
It was flat and boring, but there was one scene, which is the reason why it's not the worst film of the year. That's still a tie, I think, between Norm of the North and Ride Along, too.
It's not even close for me. It's not that bad.
In Dark City, you think it's a film noir, and you think you're in New York City, but all of a sudden, about two-thirds of the way through, the camera pulls way back, and we see what Dark City really is. It's not a city. It's something floating out in space. Gods of Egypt does the same thing. It goes way, way out. Horus, the main god, the god of the heir apparent, he's played by Nikolai Coster-Waldau. If you are a Game of Thrones fan, he is Jaime Lassiter. He flies up to a spaceship to see his grandfather, the sun god Ra, played by
I believe is long dead, right?
Jeffrey Rush, an Aussie, by the way.
Yes.
And Nikolai, he's the Dane. So he flies up to hang out with his grandfather and get some help, and we see what's going on here. Ra drags the sun across the sky. He fights some demon that's never explained that wants to gobble up the earth. And then he swings around the other side of the, I don't know, air quotes, world. And we really get a look at what's going on here. That was so intriguing to me. This could have gone places. Of course, they never talk about it. They never mention it. You never see it again. But something's going on there. It almost had potential.
That whole scene just flew right by me. Sorry. Didn't catch any of that, but it really has this sort of Aladdin vibe. If it was like a live action Aladdin set in, you know, mythical Egypt, then that's sort of what you get. Because there is a little bit of there are a couple of love story plot lines in there, and it really is about this mortal who's trying to help the gods in order to make sure that he can bring back the love of his life and from the gates of death or gates of purgatory. I don't know where exactly they were. But it's an odd movie, but I think if you like that sort of thing, you got
nothing else
to see.
It almost sounds like you're recommending this.
I recommend the next one more.
Well, I'm glad you're talking about the mortal, because we need to talk about him. He's played by Brenton Thwaites. He was the kid in The Giver, if you saw The Giver. He's also an Aussie.
Yes.
he plays a role. Horus is going through this character arc. You said it's like Aladdin. I think it's a lot like Thor. Thor is about to become king of Asgard,
yes,
and he gets kicked out because he has too much hubris. He doesn't know how to be a leader yet. Same with Horus. He actually, if he didn't go through this whole long journey, he probably would have been a horrible king. And Brenton Thwaites is the guy who, he becomes Horus's little acolyte. The guy, he needs protection, otherwise he's going to die. Horus learns to care about humans through Brenton Thwaites, his character's name Beck. And that's a theme there. That could have been something. If they had actually spent some time on that, with a god learning to respect and care for humans, that could have made this movie just bad instead of god-awful.
It wasn't god-awful, and I agree that there is a bit of a hint of a Thor vibe going on in there, and maybe they could have focused on that a little more. Again, it just went on too long and got too boring, But in the end, the very end, there is a nice message to be found in the movie.
What was it?
It was something about humans and gods all living together in harmony.
I don't.
Peace on earth and all that fun stuff.
You must have been in a good mood that night or something.
Well, considering we had driven through a monsoon to get to the movie screening, it could have been worse.
To close on Gods of Egypt, there's a point, I remember this. Beck, he's a thief. He's really good. He's very agile, and he's good at stealing stuff. And he's going through this obstacle course to steal back one of Horus's eyeballs. And he has to cross this series of bridges. And at one point he says, "This isn't fair. I didn't know about this bridge. This is criminal." And all I could think was, yes, this whole thing is criminal. What you're doing to me right now and making this stupid CGI movie is criminal.
I think to compare it to Norm of the North or Ride Along 2 is unfair. I actually think I would put this one, somewhere above those movies. Again, not high on my list for 2016, but certainly not at the bottom.
Well, let's talk about a lighter movie and a whole better movie. Last week, we talked about Race, the Jesse Owens biopic, 1936 Berlin Olympics, and the very next week, we have another movie about the Olympics, Hannah.
We do, and this one was Eddie the Eagle, and it's a feel-good movie for the masses. That's what I like about it. It's based on a true story, although from everything I've heard, it's 10 to 15% accurate. But the inspirational aspect of it is intact. And it's the story of Eddie Edwards, who is this British ski jumper who pretty much charmed the world at the 1988 Olympics in Calgary. Because he just had a goofy way about him, big glasses. He did not seem to have any real athletic prowess. And he had gotten into the Olympics sort of through a backdoor loophole by discovering that Britain didn't have a ski jumping team. And if he could qualify, he could compete in the Olympics because he could not make the downhill skiing team. And so it's really just about how this guy who had dreamed ever since he was a kid, who had overcome physical ailments, said he was going to make it to the Olympics somehow, and he does. And it really is all about his journey. And there's the obligatory coach, played by Hugh Jackman, who is basically this washed-out American ski jumper who he finds in Europe and teaches Eddie how to jump enough not to kill himself. And that seems to be the primary goal. And the coach is looking for his own redemption because he had pretty much failed at his own attempts to make it to the Olympics and had disappointed the U.S. Coach from back in his day. And overall, it's just a good, solid, inspirational story. It reminded me a little bit of like October Sky, which was one of my all-time faves.
The only movie I could think about while watching Eddie the Eagle was Cool Runnings. Mm-hmm. They take place at the exact same Olympics. Something was going on in Calgary in 1988. Yes. All these movies are now coming out, and, well, Cool Runnings is not new, but it's from the same Olympics, and they're underdogs, the Jamaican bobsled team and Eddie the Eagle, and the coach is the same. Hugh Jackman, first of all, is not real. They made up the entire character of Coach... Bronson Peary.
Which is sad to hear. I was disappointed.
Because, you know, at the end of movies, you're looking for the words, the epilogue. Where are they now? Here's what they're doing. And I'm like, well, that's weird. Well, it's not weird because he's fake. He's fictional. And he's so familiar because that's John Candy. That's John Candy from Cool Runnings. They're both alcoholic. They both have a mysterious past within the sport. They've both been kind of banished, exiled from the sport. The only difference is the waistline. Hugh Jackman is the most physically fit and well-functioning alcoholic you've ever seen.
And Hugh Jackman was actually one of the best parts of this movie. The movie took off after Hugh Jackman entered the scene, so I could see why they needed to create a character that would draw more people into the movie, because up until that point, the movie wasn't necessarily moving forward and going very far, but Hugh Jackman has such an on-screen presence that I became much more absorbed in the story once he was in it.
I absolutely am going to disagree with you, Hannah. I did not need Hugh Jackman to pick this movie up for me. Eddie the Eagle, played by Taron Egerton, I thought he was fascinating. He was so good as Eddie. Taron, did you see Kingsman: The Secret Service?
I didn't. I missed that one.
It came out last year, and he's this punk kid this tiny little like 16-year-old. And for him to play Eddie the Eagle the next year, they don't look alike. I saw the movie poster and like, this isn't Taron Egerton. This is some fat guy with glasses and an underbite.
They nerded him up big time for this movie.
And they did the nationality thing again. You know, Hugh Jackman, the Aussie, plays the American. Taron Egerton's Welsh and he plays a Brit. But I am so fascinated by what Taron did to this character. His stock went way up in my book.
I liked him a lot. I don't know that anyone else couldn't have played the role. I read that both Steve Coogan, who everyone might remember from Philomena, who seems kind of old for this particular role, but he had once been up for it, as had Rupert Grint from Harry Potter. And I could see Rupert Grint in this role. I could have seen that working as well. So I think he did a great job. He was very entertaining. And again, I like this movie. I think I liked it slightly more than Race. If I had to choose which Olympic underdog movie to go see, although certainly I wouldn't say that Jesse Owens was an underdog. But I definitely think Eddie the Eagle has a little more mass appeal and just is more fun.
You know, I'm surprised at myself, because going into these two films, I expected to like Race a lot better than Eddie the Eagle. And I agree with you. Eddie the Eagle is actually a little bit better than Race. Race is a little flat and Eddie's just fun and enjoyable. Mm-hmm. And I usually don't like fun and enjoyable movies.
That's right. But Eddie, imagine that.
I really liked Eddie, and I can see why I grimace when you say Rupert Grint playing Eddie. I don't see it. But I'm surprised everybody wasn't attached to the script at one point. It came to being the producer, Matthew Vaughn. He directed Kingsman, hence that's why Taron Egerton got hired. He also directed X-Men First Class. He's an action director. He was sitting down with his children watching Cool Runnings, and he said, "Why aren't there more movies like this?" So he goes and finds the Eddie the Eagle script, which had been floating around Hollywood for 15 years. Hence why people were attached to it at different points. And he said, he went and bought the script, and that's how it got made. He just wanted another movie his kids could see, an uplifting movie about the Olympics. And it really is uplifting. It's a little long. I didn't love it. It's not great. Right. I give it a thumbs middle instead of a really a thumbs sky high, but he's such a likable character that, I was rooting for Eddie.
Well, it's kind of like Eddie himself. He just barely qualifies. And this movie just barely qualifies for being really good.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
I noticed the challenge. It's very hard to judge height and scale on a movie screen. But when you see that 90-meter jump that he has to jump off of, you believe that thing would kill somebody. The cinematography of how they do it, I expected it. You got camera in his face as he's going down. You got a camera to the side and a camera behind him. So it shows that he's going fast in these quick edits. I don't know if they really needed that, because, man, that thing looks scary as hell.
And I think the reason this took so long to get made was the fact that they had to create these fictionalized characters. Because I do have a vague recollection of Eddie in the 1988 Olympics and being one of those people who was watching those sort of behind-the-scenes packages that they would do during the Olympic Games to kind of introduce you to who these folks were and to give you their backstory. And he was very endearing at the time, and I do remember that. But obviously, there wasn't all that much more to his story. And so in order to have a reason to get that story made and get it out there and provide that inspirational boost, they needed to create a whole lot of fiction around it as well.
Well, while Eddie the Eagle soars 1,000% higher than Gods of Egypt, it is just slightly better than Race. And, you know, if you need to get out of the house this weekend and keep the kids busy, this is a good way to do it.
Yeah, and if you like Cool Runnings, it's certainly a good one to compare it to.
It's Cool Runnings Part 2, but it's just like the Oscars and Gods of Egypt. It's the whitewashing of Cool Runnings.
Yes.
So I want to move on to if we pick the winners, because the Oscars are banging on our door. They are so soon, and we have some really important categories to cover. But before we actually get to the important categories, let's get to a lesser category, because you're so proud of yourself that you listened to all the 5 Best Song nominees.
I did. I actually tracked down where to listen to them, and I went through, and I was so surprised that it was a very easy choice for me once I heard them all. And just to find what they are here, They are Earned It from 50 Shades of Grey.
A good song.
Manta Ray from Racing Extinction, which I'd never heard of.
Good documentary, though.
Simple Song Number 3 from Youth, which you liked.
Isn't that classical?
I don't know. Till It Happens to You from The Hunting Ground.
Great another documentary. Awful song.
And Writings on the Wall with the Bond theme from Sam Smith.
Yeah.
And you just completely stomped on the choice I'm about to make. But out of all of those, the one that I enjoyed the most and think will win is Till It Happens to You, really? Sung by Lady Gaga.
Written by Diane Warren.
And written by Diane Warren.
Who people don't really know. Diane Warren pretty much wrote every song you like on the radio.
That's right. Including this one.
You like this song?
I did. Listening to every single one of them, this was hands down the one that I would pick. And so that automatically is my pick for
the
best song.
It's really that much better than Earned It?
I did. I liked it better than Earned It.
Earned It.
Which, that one is fine. And, hey, if something from 50 Shades of Grey wins an Oscar, that'll be intriguing.
It's not going to win.
It's not going to win. And Sam Smith could win. But, again, my choice if I were choosing the Oscars.
All right.
And if we end up, having a bottle of wine riding on who gets the...
you want to do that?
I think we're going to have to.
Maybe not just on this category, but on the whole thing.
On the whole thing, or yeah. But I definitely will... I'm going to go for Lady Gaga, as you like to call her.
Oh, yes, Lady Gaga. That's all she needs now is an Oscar, and I think her ego will get even bigger.
So what's your choice on that one?
Well, considering that all the good songs this year are not nominated, I'll settle with Earned It.
Okay.
Even though it's not my favorite, but...
Well, we'll see.
The Oscars start off to get everyone's attention, to keep them tuned in with the supporting role Oscars, and then they go into all the other categories no one really cares about. But that's how it always leads off, usually an actress in a supporting role. And if we pick the winners, first the nominees are Jennifer Jason Leigh in The Hateful Eight, Rooney Mara, Carol, a lot of people think she was lead actress material there, not supporting actress. Rachel McAdams in the ensemble Spotlight, Alicia Vikander in The Danish Girl, and Kate Winslet in Steve Jobs. Hannah, this is hands down, she's going to win, and I'm glad she's going to win. She's got my vote, Alicia Vikander for The Danish Girl.
Yay, we actually agree on that one. I thought you might be going for Kate Winslet.
No, it is the best movie, but she's not the best supporting actress.
Okay. No, I totally agree with you there. I think Alicia Vikander deserves it. There was absolutely nobody else on that list that I liked more or that I think comes even a close second.
No, there is a close second. Her name's Rooney Mara. But Alicia Vikander she blew Eddie Redmayne out of the water, a man, the reigning Oscar champion in the Best Actor category and nominated again for the same film. But she annihilates him. They're on screen. They share the screen a lot. And I don't even see Eddie when she's on screen. That is how good she is.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Outstanding. Yes. Yeah, this isn't good. I don't like agreeing with you. It throws off my podcast.
We might both have agreed for different reasons, but I do think she will win, and I would like to see her win.
I think we're going to be happy when that happens.
Let's hope so.
Take me through the supporting actor.
The supporting actor is tough. It's Christian Bale for The Big Short, Tom Hardy for The Revenant, Mark Ruffalo for Spotlight, Mark Rylance for Bridge of Spies, and Sylvester Stallone for Creed. Now, because I think they are all equally worthy, I will give the edge to Sylvester Stallone for the sympathy vote for Creed as payback for him not getting an Oscar for Rocky when he originated the role.
It won Best Picture. He got what he got.
It won Best Picture, but he was not recognized for this specific role. And because this is such a tough category and it's such a toss-up among all of them, I am going to predict that Sylvester Stallone will win. I do not necessarily think he was the best in this category. I think Mark Ruffalo and Mark Rylance were both slightly better, but because I think they could split the vote with Tom Hardy and Christian Bale and each other, I think Sylvester Stallone ends up coming up on top.
Well, first of all, I disagree with you that they all deserve to be there and that these were the best five of the year. They're not. Christian Bale does not deserve to be there. He was not the best supporting actor in that film, let alone of the year, so I'm throwing him right out. I agree that Sylvester Stallone will win, but he should not win. The winner should be Mark Ruffalo for Spotlight. he out of an enormous dozens long cast and spotlight and a lot of heavy hitters. Rachel McAdams nominated, Michael Keaton, Liev Schreiber, everybody in that movie. He drove that movie. He might have been just one of the reporters, one of the supporting actors, but man, when he was on screen, you paid attention.
That's true, he did. Sylvester Stallone, though, his role is slightly bigger in his supporting role category for Creed in his role. So I do think Sly will win, because I think a lot of people just want to see him get up there. Although I hope he's improved his acceptance speech skills since he won the last one, I think the Golden Globes. But whatever he last won, he needed a little prep.
Yeah, I hope he's going to win. I hope he's already practicing his speech.
Yeah, memorize it. Do a little acting, Sly.
I wouldn't be shocked if Ruffalo got up there. I'm glad Rylance and Hardy are nominated. I thought they were outstanding, but they don't have a chance here.
Yeah.
Before we get to the real big categories, is there any other categories you wanted to go over?
I think we've hit most of them. I think Inside Out's a shoo-in for animated.
Oh, easily, yeah.
I think The Revenant is probably a shoo-in for cinematography.
Lubezki's going to get his third Oscar in a row.
I think Mad Max, Fury Road, and Star Wars will split whatever technical categories there are to split.
A lot of people think Mad Max is just going to sweep all these lesser categories like visual effects and sound. And careful, Star Wars is lurking around every single one of those categories.
I hope Star Wars gets in there with something, because I would hate to see it not get recognized at all. And I personally liked the Star Wars movie better than Mad Max, so I hope it gets a little love. I'm going to go with Amy for documentary. I don't know
that you think should win or will win.
I think both. I didn't love any documentary this year. Like, I wasn't completely over.
Wait, didn't we already talk about?
Yeah, I think we talked about last week. So I'm just putting it out there that that's what I'm putting on my ballot is Amy.
I think everyone is in their Oscar polls guessing Amy that it will win because it's won a lot already. But fingers crossed, Miss Simone upset.
Well, maybe. And I have absolutely no idea with things like documentary short subject, but I'm just going to circle Body Team 12. Because I think it had something to do with the Ebola virus. So I'm going to give a little shout out to a contemporary story that I remember at least seeing the title. Although, of course, you can never count out a Holocaust movie.
Yeah, careful,
so,
there's someone in there. There's a title in there that says Shoah.
Specters of the Shoah, Claude Lanzmann's Specters of the Shoah. And so we are approaching the whole era, the Holocaust Memorial Month in May. And you can never underestimate a Holocaust movie.
Two of these documentary short subjects. I saw Chow Behind the Lines and Last Day of Freedom, and I guarantee you the winner will not be either of those two.
Okay, there you go. And so I'm going to say either Body Team 12 or Specters of the Shoah.
Yeah, probably right.
And so, yeah, I think those are my little sideline. I would love to see, I think, speaking of Holocaust movies, I think I'd like to see Mustang steal the foreign language film from Son of Saul.
I really think Mustang's better than Son of Saul.
I think it's a more, it's a movie that is more accessible. I think Son of Saul is something that I've just seen before, and Mustang is not something I've seen before. So if I had to, that's my long shot pick.
Your long shot is going to lose. Son of Saul is going to win, hands down. Not that I'm completely defending it. I think Son of Saul is just a little bit better than Mustang, but they're both fine. They're not amazing films. Son of Saul is really overrated.
Absolutely.
But folks at home, if you're filling out an Oscar ballot, if you do not put down Son of Saul, that's a sucker move, because this is a gimme category.
However, you need to pick a few that are potentially spoilers.
And that comes from documentary short subjects and costume design. That doesn't come from gimme categories.
All right. Well, we'll see. We'll see soon enough.
All right. Drum roll. One of the biggest categories, one of the easiest picks of who will win. Not necessarily who should win. Actress. Best actress. We both know who will win.
And I think should win.
What?
Brie Larson for Room. I have been a fan of this movie since the day it came out, and I've been with her throughout this entire time, promoting her during all these awards categories, and so I would love to see Brie Larson take home the top prize. I think she will. I think she should.
Well, first, I want to see Jennifer Lawrence get on stage to apologize for her nomination, because she should know she didn't earn it either.
Yes, I agree with that too. There's no joy in joy.
Kate Blanchett's just there because it's an Oscar role, and she always gets nominated every year. So that's
kiss a girl and you get nominated.
It's either it's Meryl Streep wasn't nominated, so it was Kate Blanchett. You know, it's either one of the two every year. None of my really favorite actresses are on this list. So, but if who should win? I'm actually going to go with the uber underdog of Charlotte Rampling. I thought she was devastating as the woman confronting harsh truths at such a late point in her relationship. She was convincing, believable, and emotionally just shattering.
She was indeed excellent in this movie, but I wouldn't say that. I think Brie Larson was also devastating and good.
It's a different sort of devastation.
It was a different sort of devastation, but I think they both pulled it off very well. And I just think that Brie Larson did so in a movie that a lot more people will have seen.
Well, nobody saw 45
no.
Years. And out of all the Best Picture nominees, Room has the least amount of money earned. So not a lot of people actually saw it. And it's because they read what it was about, and they're like, hell no, I'm not sitting through that movie.
Exactly. So that's why hopefully if Brie Larson does win it, maybe people will realize that they shouldn't have been so quick to shy away from going to see it, because her performance and Jacob Tremblay's make it worth seeing.
It's not if. She's going to win.
She is going to win, and she should.
Another person who's going to win is the gentleman who's going to win Best Actor, which is...
That guy who was in Growing Pains.
Jeremy Miller?
Alan Thicke. Robin Thicke won't appear singing and giving the award out, but Leonardo DiCaprio will win again for the totality of his work. I don't think he should be winning for The Revenant. I did not particularly like that movie at all. I did not particularly like Leo DiCaprio's role in this movie at all. But Leo DiCaprio is a very good actor who has been Oscar worthy for in so many other movies over the past 20 years that he should have won before. And I think he's being given this Best Actor nod this time, just to sort of make up for the fact that he probably should have gotten it before, and this movie just got a lot of attention for all the wrong reasons, but it got a lot of attention, and he's getting all the love.
There's actually growing backlash about the idea that Leo's finally going to win an Oscar for this particular role, because people say you're confusing Best Actor with a whole bunch of time on screen and sitting there and grunting. I agree with him. He was not the best actor this year. I don't know who you think should be best actor, but I guarantee you, whatever your opinion is, if it's not Michael Fassbender, you're wrong.
I knew you would say that. I would divide it between Michael Fassbender and Matt Damon for The Martian.
That comedy, The Martian?
That comedy, dramedy, whatever you'd want to call it. I think Matt Damon just... I think people underestimate just what goes into playing a real human and a contemporary, accessible guy. And I thought he was so good in that movie. And I thought Michael Fassbender was very good as Steve Jobs. And I think that it should have been a race between those two. But Leo DiCaprio will win because he's Leo DiCaprio and he didn't win it before.
Well, I don't know if that many people like Leo DiCaprio, but I think... I know he's going to win, and I'm sure it'll be a profound speech. I'm sure he's practiced it 19,000 times.
He does give a good acceptance speech. He's very good at that.
He's ready to go, and he's going to get up there. And that's going to lead us to the big one of the night. I'll skip over our best director because we already know who that is.
Yeah, The Revenant.
Yes, it's The Revenant. There's probably a 51% chance The Revenant takes home Best Picture. It's split right now because there's a 49% chance I think Spotlight takes it. They're neck and neck. In the awards shows that have already happened this year, the Spotlight really had the early momentum, but The Revenant has come on late. The Academy voters are different. They're certainly different than the Golden Globes and Critics' Choice and all that stuff. But Who should win Best Picture, Hannah?
Spotlight. If I had to choose, I would go with Spotlight. I think The Revenant probably will win. I think The Martian is a total long shot. I think The Big Short is possible. So I would say the odds are on The Revenant, but I still hope that Spotlight wins.
I'd be fine if Spotlight won. It's my second choice. It's a really poignant film. It will nail you to your seat, and you will think about it long afterwards. But what should win, I think, and is a dark horse candidate, I think, behind the two that may split the vote out of there, is The Big Short. The Big Short, I think, should win. Not that it's one of the, you know, it's not one of the best films of the past decade, but I think it's one of the best films from this year. It made my top 10 list. It just confronts such a... it goes beyond complicated, complex, vague, mysterious, shadowy world that people owe it to themselves to learn more about and eventually do something about. However, even though I think it should win, I would love to see the cast and crew of Mad Max Fury Road get up on that stage.
I think that's your real dark horse there. I did not love Mad Max enough for me to hope that happens. For me, I would love to see Matt Damon and crew up there for The Martian as a just shocker of the night. That would be my dream.
No way.
But on my pool, having to choose, knowing that I need to possibly have a bottle of wine riding on this, I will choose Spotlight, knowing that it's very possible The Revenant will win.
Well, I think our bet this week should be total. I think maybe just 1 point a category, total Oscar pool, everything.
Sure. Sounds good.
We'll do that between now and Sunday. But, you know, The Martian has a lot of nominations. It's got like 6 to 8 nominations. And I almost want to bet you that it won't win one.
I'm tempted
to wager that.
You can wager that, but it's really sad because I don't think I could argue with you on that one as much as I'd love to. That is the greatest miscarriage of justice this movie season.
Oh, stop.
It is.
What do you think is, other than Deadpool, what do you think is going to earn the most money at the box office this week? Do you think it's going to be Gods of Egypt, or do you think it's going to be Eddie the Eagle?
Well, you know, it's really hard to tell anymore because Risen actually rose to the occasion. Neither of us had seen that one, and it did okay.
Yeah, people were saying they finally made a good Jesus movie.
So those faith-based movies, you know, somehow managed to do pretty well, even though I never find anybody that I know who's actually gone to see it. The Witch did fairly well. I don't know anybody who actually went and saw that one either.
I know a lot of people who saw that.
So, but it just goes to show how sort of diverse the movie viewing public is. So I don't know if there's any bet to be made there. I'm sticking with Deadpool, I think, to some degree, because I think word of mouth just keeps spreading.
Oh, I think
as people see Deadpool.
Deadpool win a third week.
Which is amazing.
I don't think either Gods of Egypt nor Eddie the Eagle have the smash to displace Deadpool yet.
And it's kind of sad that it's a big week in new releases for a whole lot of non-American actors. Yeah. So the two U.S. releases all feature a bunch of Aussies and Brits and things like that.
But you evaded my question.
Which
one's going to earn more money?
That's because I always get these wrong, and you know it. And then you can call me on it.
You're due.
I would hope, I think, that...
Flip a quarter long enough and heads will come up. You know?
I hope Eddie the Eagle gets it, but I'm not sure if they over-promoted Eddie the Eagle too long ago, and now all the kids are seeing are the ads for Gods of Egypt. But I'm going to give a slight edge to Eddie the Eagle.
I don't think it's gonna be slight at all, and it's actually, I'm going against my very limited empirical evidence. The guys at the office, they all asked me about Eddie the Eagle. They'd all heard about Eddie the Eagle, and then I mentioned I saw this movie called Gods of Egypt, and no one had heard anything. But I think Gods of Egypt is going to, by a couple of million dollars, do better than Eddie the Eagle.
It could. I wish I could say I disagree, but I really don't know which way it's going to go. But I do think that the young adult crowd, if they end up going to the movies this weekend, they are going to put Gods of Egypt a little bit over the mark. And unfortunately, the people who are probably going to go see Deadpool are the same ones that might have some interest in Eddie the Eagle. So I'm actually kind of backtracking.
No. People who go see Deadpool are more likely to see Gods of Egypt than Eddie the Eagle.
I don't know. I guess Eddie the Eagle is a good choice for a family movie, whereas Gods of Egypt, go let the teenagers go and see it without you. So I don't know. I'm completely torn. I do not know which is going to go do better. And yes, now I'm completely backtracking away from my original prediction and thinking that Gods of Egypt might do better.
I think it will.
Yeah, I think it probably will.
Looking ahead to next week, I don't begin to know which one would make more money, because we're going to see Tina Fey goes to Afghanistan in Whiskey Tango Foxtrot.
Yep.
We're going to see Gerard Butler again in a sequel, London Has Fallen. And the new Disney animated film Zootopia are all coming out next week.
And that's going to be a tough one. That's a tough divide of moviegoers.
That's huge.
That is huge. And so that, I'm not so sure we'll really even be able to bet on that one, because I think it's going
to
be a toss-up.
We're going to have to try.
We'll try.
I've already seen two out of the three. I won't give anything away, but I'm eager to see the third one. And just for a quick recap. Oh, actually, out of those three, Whiskey Tango, London Has Fallen, and Zootopia, which one are you most excited about?
I'm excited as a former journalist to see Whiskey Tango Foxtrot.
I agree with you. I spent 10 very long months of my life in Afghanistan, so I'm tempted to see how they do it. That's actually the one I haven't seen yet. I've seen the other two. And yeah, I think next week's going to be a really, really interesting film week. And an Oscar recap.
Absolutely.
An Oscar recap, which is the highs and lows, the embarrassing moments.
And who wins the bet.
And yes, most importantly, we'll have to tell you what bottle of wine we're drinking that night.
Exactly.
So to recap, Gods of Egypt. It's only the third worst movie of the year, but it's bad.
I don't think it's that bad. I think it's okay for a PG-13 action adventure weird kind of sci-fi flick.
The green screen is more convincing than anything else. Even
it's
the
got
humans.
Pretty people in it.
Oh, they're pretty, I guess. Actually, that Hothar, the goddess of love.
Yeah.
Okay, gentlemen, you might want to go check her out.
And Gerard Butler's like he stole the same outfit from the 300. So if you liked him in that, he seemed to brought it with him to this movie. So can't go wrong there.
For Gerard Butler, he was at the Daytona 500 last week, and he got to say, "Gentlemen, start your engines." And he tried to get the crowd going in a chant, "This is Daytona," instead of "This is Sparta." And no one knew what he was doing.
Oh.
Everyone was sitting down like they were not participating. I felt
poor
so bad
Gerard.
For the guy.
That's pretty bad.
Daytona did not give Gerard Butler the love.
Yeah. But if you really need your dose of Gerard Butler and you don't have the inclination to wait for London Has Fallen a week later, then this one you can go and see.
No, wait. Wait.
Wait a week?
Wait a week.
Okay.
Do not go see Gods of Egypt for your Gerard Butler fix. And Eddie the Eagle, a surprising feel-good movie. I don't like feel-good movies, but this one made me feel good. I liked Eddie. I liked Taron Egerton as Eddie. It's a little bit better than Race. If you miss Cool Runnings, go see Eddie the Eagle.
Hugh Jackman's American accent feels a bit forced throughout much of this movie, but when he comes on screen, most chicks will be happy about that. And
the alcoholic with six-pack abs.
Yes, there you go. And I think, yes, you're right. Eddie the Eagle is just your basic inspirational feel-good movie that the whole family can enjoy.
All right. For Charlie Jewell and on behalf of Hannah Bookdoll, thanks for listening to Cinema Clash.
Have a good weekend and enjoy the Oscars.